Welcome to another edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies, the Talking Pictures Podcast. I'm Neil Rosen, joined today, as always, with Bill Bregoli.
Hi.
And Bill McCuddy.
We watch the bad movies, so you don't have to.
And a regular on our TV show, our defunct TV show, which I am working to get back on the air. Joining us again on the podcast is Mike Sargent.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Okay, what are we talking about today?
Well, there's Barry White? What was
well,
that?
Well, that was, you know, sort of Barry White
meets
Elvis.
I thought it was more Elvis. I was going to say it sounded more like Elvis. Right. Bad right. Elvis.
Barry but, Elvis.
Thank you very much. Run it tut on the drums. Run it tut. Anyway.
Stay with us. It gets good.
Okay. We're going to talk about, so Labor Day has come and gone. At least we're getting better quality things, or we're going to find out.
Maybe. Toronto Film Festival. There's all sorts of things popping
in
New York
the
Film
theaters.
Festival.
We could talk about that a little bit, too. When is that starting?
Toronto's happening any day now.
Okay. We're going to talk about the new Reese Witherspoon movie, Home Again. And we're going to talk about a Stephen King horror film called It. And we spoke to...
We're going to talk about It. What's it called?
It Again?
With a kid named Finn Wolfhard, which sounds like a porno name. But that's the kid's
So we've
name.
Got interviews with the kid. We've got interviews with...
What's it called?
It's called It.
Okay.
What's the name of the guy on
who's
first?
Who's on first?
What's the name of the guy on first base?
I don't know.
Who's on first?
All right.
No, I don't know. He's on third.
To the four people still listening, we have some sound from Stephen
King. Yes, we do.
Our own Bill Bregoli interviewed him.
That's right.
You interviewed Stephen King?
Well, he was in a room.
Oh. Don't worry. Okay. I was there when he...
Now, we're going to talk about... Also, this being after Labor Day, the television networks are debuting their new fall slate.
What are television networks?
Yeah, exactly, of TV shows. And the landscape has changed dramatically. We're going to get into that as well. But let's start out.
Ozark isn't as good as you think it is, by the way.
What's that?
I jumped into Ozark on Netflix, and it's a mixed bag. I know you loved it, but
no.
And you love Billions.
No, I never saw Billions. You keep telling me that I don't watch Billions.
Every week I say he watches Billions.
All right, that said, let's start with the movies, and let's take it away. Mike Sargent. Well, let's take it away with It. Let's talk about It. Bill Bregoli, let's talk about It.
Sure. Mike was there, too, last night.
I was. I
Bill,
could definitely
tell everybody
about it.
It's about It.
It's about...
I see a clown in the trimmer.
That's right.
A scary clown in the trailer.
It's based on Stephen King's novel about a scary clown who likes to eat children. And
this has been done before, right?
Yeah, this is done on TV in 1986.
On like ABC, right? I remember this was
I
like
never
a,
saw it, but
it
I
was
remember.
A four-parter it was, something.
It was.
And it was
yeah. Wasn't Tim Curry?
Tim Curry was
yeah,
the clown.
Right.
Yes, Tim Curry the clown.
Right. And now it's...
Is a name the clown this time? Yeah, anybody we know?
Skarsgård her name? But Billy Skarsgård, the Skarsgård you've never heard of, who's on a couple of TV shows.
Like the bad bald one.
Yeah, and I don't know. The plot, everybody probably kind of knows that this clown scares kids. They live in a little town in Maine. Actually, they shot it in Ontario, but it looks like Maine. And the thing, all right, I'm going to jump right to my biggest problem with it, and I want to see if Mike agrees. Okay.
You want to tell us a little bit more about what it's about?
No, kids die. That's all you need to know. They beat each other up.
And they changed the time frame, right?
They changed the time frame to the 80s to make, which basically
when he wrote
made
it.
The movie look
right.
like. He wrote it in the 1950s, but the screenwriters,
so no cell phones.
All the screenwriters grew up in the 80s, so they wanted to put in 80s references. So now we have Molly Ringwald jokes. The kids are riding around on Stingray bicycles instead of just old-fashioned bicycles. But still, it took place in a time period where parents didn't chauffeur their kids everywhere. These are free-range children. They go out, they have fights with each other, and to me...
Like chicken.
Yeah. These are free-range kids.
I believe that was the reference,
Mr. Rosen.
They get
to do whatever the hell they want back at, like I did in the old days, and they fight with rocks, which I did in the old days, and that was, for me, the scariest part of the movie, that rock fight. Never mind the clown. The clown, to me, looked like CGI for 90% of the time that you saw.
Was it a CGI? The whole clown was CGI?
I bet some of it was. Certainly when they stuck stuff through his head, he was CGI. And when his mouth opened, he was CGI. And that was my kind of biggest nitpick with it for the most part.
It sounds like Stranger Things.
It looks like Stranger Things, too. And one of the kids was in Stranger Things.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's like a Spielberg movie?
A superhero movie, too, in that they have great big fights with lots of effects toward the end. And it's 2 hours and 15 minutes
was
long.
It wow.
It also makes it look like a superhero movie.
It has some genuine jolts, though, right?
It's got some jolts. It's got some grossness. It's got a girl, thank goodness. because otherwise, and every adult in the movie is kind of weird or like
creepy.
So are you positive on it? Would you tell people to go see it this weekend?
I'm positive. Yeah, go ahead and have fun. It's a good popcorn movie.
Mike?
Well, you know, I have to say I agree with everything you said. I didn't really have the problem that you did. I think it actually raises the bar. It raises the bar because it achieves what is almost impossible, where it sustains being scary. We have scary scenes during the day, which you hardly ever get to see. It sustains being scary even when you know what the setup is, even then you know and it's been done before, it still manages to scare you. And the dialogue and the characters, you know, this is kind of a classic, you know, Rob Reiner directed the classic, you know, Stephen King film where, like, that's the bar. Stand By Me. That's the bar people have set where you meet all these characters and you actually care about them and what happens to them, you care about them. They really do that here. The references are great. The dialogue's great. The kids are great. I have to say, at a certain point, you do just turn off and enjoy.
Right.
And totally, totally enjoy. But I have to say, my favorite part about the surreality of all of this is this headline, okay, that has... You know, this is not in the movie, but okay, this is a headline and
review.
No, this is just a headline. Okay, clowns concerned it remake will be bad for business. that's my favorite.
You know,
headline.
It's interesting.
Is that from the Onion?
This is real news.
When does the clown show up? How deep into the movie does it?
In the first five minutes, which is great. Also, like, you know what you're up against.
So the clown eats a kid in the first five minutes,
and that's all.
And is it gory? Do you actually see him
blood in the water?
That's not selling popcorn.
Listen.
You know, a number of years ago, maybe 20, 30 years ago,
there
was no
story?
Clown bashing. And all of a sudden, people started, I remember watching on TV and in movies, it would crop up that people would say, I have a fear of clowns. And
because,
you know,
of it.
Well, but that was never like when I was a kid and you were a kid, Bill, and we were all kids. That there was never, clowns were never
the
subject of people being scared by clowns. Then all of a sudden, it just became... I won't say people aren't scared of mimes, but mimes became fodder for just people going like Carrot Top. Like, mimes got no respect. Clowns became something that people got scared of, you know? And
especially if they were crying on the inside kind of a clown.
Yeah.
I think clowns were always scary to people. I think people never admit it. I think Stephen King, what he's best at is, like, reminding us of what we're afraid of or admitting what we're afraid of.
Then we had Gacy. Then we had, like, serial killers that were dressing up
like
clowns.
How about Shakes the Clown? Remember that movie?
Bobcat Goldthwait.
So let me ask you two a question. Did it play well in the room? It was a bunch of critics, right?
Well. Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Well, wait a minute. We should tell people that when we all go to movies, it's either a private screening at a studio screening room or it's a what they call a promotional screening.
This was in a big movie theater.
So this had what they call all media, meaning that a lot of people there were maybe ticket winners from some local radio station or something. So you saw it with a real audience.
They screamed, but I'll tell you what they enjoyed more than anything. There's enough jolts, genuine jolts, you know, and there's, you know, I have a friend who's
the cheap kind where they just cut to something really fast.
The beautiful thing about it is, you know, I haven't looked at the screenwriters and everything. I didn't do my homework the way I should.
Carrie Fukunaga was one.
Was one of the screenwriters. Yeah. Well, what the beautiful thing he does is they'll give you a scare, and then they give you, like, a something to calm you down, something to make you laugh. And they give you a scare, and then they calm you down, and they make you laugh. And it's like...
I'm frightened just hearing that.
Right. Well, but, like, what's his name, who may Get Out said, the relation to comedy and horror is the best. Horror has a lot of comedy in it, and vice versa.
Right.
And this is a good combo of the two, because it's just as funny as it is scary. Some of the dialogue
and
of the kids.
2 hours and 15 minutes,
you
not
don't
just
feel
a little
it. You
long?
You do not
really?
Feel it. Well,
because I was really
feel,
surprised.
Let's put it away. You do feel it. There's a point where, like, okay, they could end the movie here, and then they can keep going, and you go, okay, but then you're in. You're already in. Like, you feel like you're watching
like
a
Carrie,
mini-sequel.
It's got, like, three endings? Or
No. This is a little more like AI, where it's like, okay, is it ending?
Wait,
oh,
I
no.
want to see
really?
This movie.
Oh, wait, is it ending? No. But if AI had ended on a good note.
Other than the Stephen King pedigree here, director-wise, screen, the people who wrote this thing, nobody's got, like, extensive credits other than, you know, people... Well, one of the writers, did, you know, was a producer on True Detective, but you know,
King is the big name here. King he's the big draw. Yeah. He's what people come to.
You know what, Mike? Did you notice the big reaction at the very, very, very end when the title comes up and it says "It." Part one.
Chapter one. Well, you know, it's great. It's a great setup for the second film. We can't not mention that because the book really in the original one, what we see in this movie was a flashback in the original miniseries. And this is really much, it's really good. Like, you really want to see what happens. You care about these characters, which I have to say, in terms of sequels, that's the only thing that makes a sequel work.
So he's going to, the clown, does the clown have a name?
Pennywise.
Pennywise, the clown. So he's going to be the new, like, Halloween Jason.
In part two, he's Pound Foolish.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, our buddy Nate Brown, who worked at New York One and is a budding filmmaker himself, was there last night. And he said whoever the young woman who is the redhead is a dead ringer for Amy Adams. And in number two, they better hire Amy Adams to play.
Oh, it looks like that. You could kind of see who they intend to play these older characters.
Really?
And
they'll
absolutely
get them, you think?
They like,
so this is going to be a huge money
guaranteed
maker.
They've already been cast.
This is a blockbuster.
Absolutely.
In your opinion.
Absolutely.
Will it have to do $100 million weekend?
Not 100, but close
no,
to
but you got
to
remember, really? it's close to Halloween.
Box office time yet.
This is that time. This
and
is
at 2 hours and 15 minutes, they can't play it as many
People
times
People have been
in
saving
day.
Their money for Listen, 4 weeks. They haven't gone to the movies at all.
This is going to set the bar. Remember I say this, setting a new bar. It's setting a new bar. I just think that it does what it does so well. That all you can do is sit there and smile.
I have one thing I would have liked to have seen, and it's going to sound really strange.
What?
I wish they gave him less money to make it.
Oh, you wanted it grittier? You wanted
it
like
a little grittier?
Can I say something about that? I think, I know exactly what you're talking about because as I'm watching the movie, I'm thinking, okay, you know, there's so much great, and last night was the premiere of American Horror, so there's so much great TV. What are you going to give me as an audience that I can't see on TV at home? And that's what you have. You have to go there.
By the way, for the record, the McCuddy women, who are huge American Horror Story fans, were very underwhelmed by last night's debut.
Do you think there's anything really McCuddy these women. Days on a quality level that you can see in the movies that you really can't see on television in terms of a dramatic
I think IMAX.
Sure.
You can't do IMAX. You can't
Dunkirk
do 3D.
Dunkirk really would work on Netflix.
Right.
No.
Remember Gravity a couple of years ago?
Yes.
That movie was horrible on television.
Right.
You had to see that on the big screen.
It was a cinematic
believe me, Hollywood,
experience.
We've had this conversation on an ongoing basis for the last ever
what
since
What about
the podcast
something, by
started.
The way, you know, when we did this on the show a number of weeks ago, Bill Bregoli was the only one who's seen it. Subsequently, I've seen it, and I know you've seen it too. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes.
Okay. Do you think you could see Spider-Man Homecoming? Do you think you need to see that on a huge screen? I don't think so.
I mean, I think, you know, again, we're talking about spectacle and summer movies, and what makes superhero movies, besides them being modern-day, you know, Greek heroes and all that, is that it's a spectacle. We've come into, you know, we live in an age where, you know, event filmmaking spectacles is there. What's the spectacle of a Spider-Man? He swings through the city.
But there's a lot of story in there. I mean, there's action sequences, like set pieces.
That's what
they
had to return to.
There's 15, 20 minutes, you know, sections of, like, which I liked, actually, where he's in school and he's trying to, you know, pick up the girl, and there's the Marissa Tomei Aunt May part, you know, he gets the tension.
You know,
I think
the answer to your question isn't really about what's on the screen, but about the people who are going to the theater. And I think it's the communal feature of being with a bunch of fans of a James Bond movie, a Lord of the Rings movie, a Spider-Man movie. You're there with your kindred spirits and you're enjoying it. I want that communal experience when I go see a big comedy because I want other people laughing with me. But when I'm a fan of something like, and I'm not a huge Spider-Man fan, so I didn't run to this.
Did you see it? I thought it was very good. Did you like it, Bill?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
you.
I saw it at a...
We all agree he's better than Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, but I'm also saying the point is you want to go and be with other people who are like-minded when you ask the question, can you see this at home? Of course you can see anything at home. Most people have a giant screen at home now. It's the question of whether you want to be with people.
I think you're making a good point because...
I'm as stunned as you are.
I think it's a good point because I have to say, I'm a film lover, obviously, or I wouldn't be a film critic. You know, I'm a filmmaker too, but what I miss as a film critic is going to see movies with the intended audience. Like you said last night, how to play with the audience.
Right.
You know, when we do, I don't really like going to promo screenings, but certain movies, like, you want to see, you know, certain movies with the intended audience.
And a really scary movie, I want to hear if everyone's scared.
And when you see with the intended audience, you get what that experience is supposed to be.
Right.
And I think that that is part of the appeal. And going back to Neil's question, like, is it worth seeing it on the big screen? Yeah, because everybody's kind of wowing with you. They're going along with the story and they're with it. But then he gets to do his Spider-Man stuff. And he's
That's certainly true of Star Trek movies. Let's say
Star Trek started out as a television series.
Let's say Sean Parker
gets
his,
as a television series.
All right, Lo, how about Star Wars? Let's say Sean Parker gets his wish, and for $50 we can see it at home or go to the theater.
Sean Parker?
The Napster guy who wants
Day and Date on Star Wars?
Day and Date in Star Wars. I'd want
to
go.
He wants to do, what does he want to do?
He's introducing, he's trying to introduce through the studios, and he's got a couple tied up already, a Day and Date release for really, really big movies now.
So you don't have to line up to see Star Wars.
They have that now, by the way.
In
Hollywood, you can pay like $1,500. And you can have Star Wars that day in your house if you are a subscriber. My brother-in-law's partner has it, and he does movie nights. But they're trying to make it for the masses. So for $50, I think if I was a huge Star Wars fan, I would still go to the theater.
But you know, that would still be cheaper than $50 because if you
if it was a $50 service for Star Wars, I'll bet it would be $100. I bet there'd be
even $100. I mean, to take a family of four, or even a date. When you get done with parking, or, you know, that's, you know, you know.
But they only let four people watch it in your house. They have drones above, and they take out anyone.
You're talking about the soda and the candy and all that. I mean, that's it's over $100. So $100, you know, but I agree with you. I'd rather see Star Wars and have the communal experience. I don't know how many people want to have the communal experience. Probably in a movie like that, if you look at the success of Comic-Con, you know, probably a lot of people that were into Star Wars would probably want to have the communal experience.
Sure, that's what fandom's all about.
But if you look at a movie like The Big Sick, okay, which is, you know, nobody really knew what that was, and it got good buzz, and, you know, probably people would be like, okay, I could go see this for, you know, like,
well, you can watch it at home. You don't need to see it in IMAX, The Big Sick.
Right, right.
But I agree with you. But I do agree with you, though. I think that
he's looking at Bill McCuddy now, for the record.
I'm looking at the other Bill. I do agree that the, for me, my most fond memories of watching movies, you know, of course you have those personal, I cried at home, but my most fond memories of viewing movies is when the whole audience is with you.
Yes, and that's true.
That's the experience of seeing the film is not just.
And you think the whole experience of going to it will be everybody will be
absolutely
scared and
absolutely
enjoy.
And enjoy.
And what did Stephen King
scare
say?
And enjoy?
Well, Stephen King said they made some changes to his novel, but that's okay.
They moved the time frame. They had to the 80s. To me, that isn't the important thing. The important thing is they kept the core idea that Pennywise gets to these kids by finding out what they're afraid of and being that thing.
Then I spoke to Finn Wolfhard. No, there's a name. Anyway.
What kind of last name is Wolfhard?
I don't know. It's like, but anyway, Finn plays Richie. He's actually the Stranger Things vet in the cast. He plays Richie, the kid who's always cracking terrible jokes. And he explains, for those who are uninitiated, just who Pennywise is.
Pennywise is sort of this demon of all demons. He's sort of every fear you can ever imagine. And he's sort of like a predator. He needs to eat. And so the food chain for that is little kids.
You know, it's kind of a coup that they got King and they thought that, you know, they needed him to give it its blessing, especially as Neil points out that there's no real big names in this thing, either behind or in front of the camera. But did you get the sense that he really was happy to be there, or it was just showing up for a paycheck?
Oh, no, I think he's happy.
He likes the way it came.
He's kind of glad. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, because the gunslinger was so bad. He's like, this looks
this
good.
Line, yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
Moving on. Let's stay with movies before we go on to television.
Please.
By the way, just on the last note on Spider-Man, did you like Tom Hardy better or Tobey Maguire? Did you like Spider-Man?
Each Spider-Man, like I really love the original Spider-Mans. I thought Spider-Man 3, of course, was an abomination. But I really liked it. I like what he did. I did like in the second iterations, the Mark,
which was the abomination, you said?
No, the third Spider-Man.
Oh. That was the abomination. The one with Thomas Hayden Church.
Yes, yes. Really bad. But I thought the new iteration, the first movie, I liked what they put back that they had left out of the Sam Raimi. Yeah, they left certain things out of Sam Raimi version. This one, I think what's best about this is it brings back what was original about Spider-Man back in the 60s. And again, this is I wasn't reading it, obviously, then, but I was a huge collector of comics, so of course you know all the lore and how Stan Lee changed the paradigm of comics. But the original thing was, he's a high school kid. Like, there were no high school superheroes and teenage superhero. That's really what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man, that he's still growing up. And I think that is really what comes across here more than any of the other five films.
There's funny. There's humor in it.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
I liked it too.
I like the fact that Captain America gives a detention speech on, like, your body's going through changes.
That's good.
And you know, I know something about
it's a good diverse cast.
So, all right. So, Mike saw this movie with Reese Witherspoon called Home Again. Now, a movie that's being put into theaters the week after Labor Day, although it is a niche audience. On paper,
and they've been advertising the shit out of it.
Right, they have been.
Nancy Myers.
Thinking that this Home Again thing, just in terms of its release date, doesn't seem like it. The studio doesn't have, unless you want to go a counter programming angle.
It's exactly what it is.
So I don't know. So tell us about it, Mike, and tell us what you thought about it.
Well, you know, again, I enjoyed the film. I enjoyed the cast.
You're a cult of one, according to Rotten Tomatoes. I think
that.
I
haven't looked up grade.
They gave it like 20%.
How diverse is this cast?
Well, come on, this is not a diverse cast, but
it's a 1% woman, right? She's filthy rich, and we're supposed to care about her.
Yeah. Well, you know, they downplay the filthy richness. You know,
she has a really nice. If it's a Nancy Myers inspired movie, I bet she has a kitchen to die for.
Well, let's put it this way. This is Nancy Myers' daughter.
Does she have the entry-level Mercedes when you're saying they downplay her well?
See, Halle Myers Shire
you're not listening.
That's because you're not rich enough. All right, but here's the deal. The premise of the movie is that she is this young, obviously hated, young witch girl who moves back to L.A. after...
She's a witch?
No, she's rich. She moved back to L.A. after her marriage has failed. Her dad was a famous filmmaker who has died, and now she's moving back to the house with her two little girls. She ends up, through a series of circumstances, having these young guys end up staying in the guest house. And they're like...
The guest house. You have that problem all the time, right, Bill? Well, you know, people coming into your guest house.
Stay in the guest house. Now, again, it is a very specific kind of story about a specific part of, you know, the culture. It's very L.A.-centric. It's very, you know, I guess you want to say class-centric. These are not, you know, earth-shattering problems that she goes through. Oh, he's too young for me to have sex.
And she has an ex-husband, right, who shows up?
Ex-husband, yes.
Right, and that's
Michael Sheen. Sheen is the ex-husband.
It's a big cast. I mean, there's a lot.
It's a very good cast, and it's fun. I enjoyed it. It's a blatant female fantasy, but, you know, I grew up watching male fantasies. I love male fantasies. Most movies are some male fantasy, so I don't have a problem watching a female fantasy. It's interesting to see how it plays out. I enjoy the characters.
How will it do?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's got a chance of not doing well, but I also think it's really going to be up to women. I think it's a question of, I mean, there is a woman here, but I think it's going to be a question of, there are a lot of movies that you can kind of just check your mind at the door if you're a guy and just enjoy the movie. And there's room for women, there are rooms for movies like this for women as well. So That's my opinion. Does that make any sense? You're smirking.
We got to ask. We got to find a woman who's seen the film again.
Well, she saw it with me this morning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so we
okay.
Have,
okay. So right. Mike brought a guest who's not in the a critic, her name is Sue. And hi, Sue.
Hi.
Talking to the mic, Sue.
Hi.
What do you think of it? Get a woman's perspective on this thing.
And I actually agree with what Mike said. I think it was really enjoyable. I don't know if people will flock to the theaters to see it, but I definitely think people, women in particular, but I think people will watch it. I think it was absolutely enjoyable. Characters were fun. It was well told.
It doesn't pander to women. Doesn't like... make her the poor little rich girl that can't get a...
No.
Not at all.
You're right. And I think I had that thought that it was like that with seeing some of... I don't know if it was the previews or just a little bit that I saw here and there, but it's not that at all, actually.
Okay.
It's very enjoyable. You know, I do think as a woman, you sort of wonder, well, you know, will... Things don't always work out the way that, you know, it does in this film, but it was nice to have the fantasy that it could.
It sounds like a younger version of As Good As It Gets. What's the one with Nicholson and... Oh, It's Complicated. And Keanu Reeves is the doctor and Diane Keaton falls in love with both of them.
No,
I think that's As Good As It Gets.
As Good As It Gets, right.
They all had good kids.
No, that was Helen Hunt. Jack Nicholson.
We still haven't said the title of this one.
Greg Kinnear.
Right.
You're talking about Diane Keaton.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Jack Nicholson and...
Keanu Reeves is the doctor and it's out in the Hamptons. What the hell is that movie called?
Something's got to give.
Yeah, that sounds like a younger version of that. This had elements of that. Was that Nancy Myers also? I think it was.
I believe it was Nancy.
What's the one with Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin?
It's complicated.
I really like that too.
And who's the woman? Is it Meryl or is it?
That was Meryl Streep. Yeah, that was Meryl Streep. Well, you know, this falls in that canon, and again, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for what it is. It's sort of like watching Jurassic Park. Okay, people can down Jurassic Park, but it's a dinosaur movie. Hello, like
so
if I go in, this is female fantasy. What's wrong with that?
I might say the romantic comedy is a dinosaur.
Yeah, and in a way it is. And
so wait, thanks, Sue. Did you finish what you were going to say?
All I was
going white people, frankly.
No, all I was going to add is it surprised me. I liked it more than I thought I would.
Good. Well, you know, the whole movie business, as our friend Robert Wall has mentioned, who's done this show, has changed into this opening weekend blockbuster superhero other than the end
spectacle.
Of the year. So I don't know. I mean, there was two generations of kids who grew up thinking that's what the movies are, as opposed to these, you know, movies that we remember.
Or
that
like
have
you
more...
said, that's what you go to the movies for, because everything else is streaming. You can watch it on your phone.
Yeah. Speaking about watching things on TV, so this is the week that the networks are kicking off their new fall season. Now, this used to be a really big deal before when the networks were the only game in town, when it was actually three networks, CBS, ABC, and NBC, and then Fox entered into the picture. But and they would promote, it's like it's the fall season, and they would have, specials, although I did notice that CBS actually had a special on the other day talking about previewing their fall lineup. But I think the networks are stuck in the past. They still are operating to a large extent on the basis of thinking this is like 1978 or 1985, when who's really, forget about not knowing what's on Netflix, who really knows about what's coming out? I mean, the only thing that I know that's coming out, I mean, I'm going to read you some things that are coming out, but without reading this list, I know that The Big Bang Theory, which is the number one show on network television, if I'm not mistaken, they're doing a spinoff of that called Young Sheldon that Jim Parsons, I think, is producing along with Chuck Lorre.
One camera. It's going to be a little different.
So it's like a 30 Rock one camera kind of.
I can't wait.
Yeah. So other than that, I mean, you know, most of these shows, you know, if you look at the track record of network television, they don't really make it anyway beyond a season. But bringing Dynasty back, you know, on the CW, the old John Forsythe, the Joan Collins show. They're actually bringing that back.
And they're bringing Joan Collins back too?
No, I don't think they're bringing Joan Collins back.
John Forsythe will have to be a hologram.
I'm going to read you a bunch of shows that are actually new shows that are coming on television.
Are you going to tell us the premise of each one?
I just want to know if you've even heard of any of these things, if it's even in your consciousness.
All right.
Okay, here's a CBS show.
So you play along.
9 JKL, which premieres Monday at 8:30. Ever heard of it? I never heard of it.
No.
AP Bio on NBC, produced by Seth Meyers. A hilariously cynical Ivy League professor loses out on his dream job and goes to work as a high school biology teacher when he imposes his unorthodox teaching style and uses the kids to plot out revenge on those who wronged him. That doesn't sound bad.
Welcome
actually.
Back, Clutter.
Lauren, it's Lorne Michaels and Seth Meyers.
That's a great title.
Here's an ABC show, Alex, Inc., starring Zach Braff, returns to TV, based on the podcast of the same name. Okay.
Why can't we get a TV show?
Yeah, really. The Brave, NBC 10 o'clock Mondays.
That I've seen. It's a young doctor, right?
A heart-pounding look at the complex world of our bravest military heroes.
Nope, not the movie, not the show I'm thinking of.
Sacrifices while executing the most challenging.
How many TV shows are made from movies?
But how much of this stuff is going to even let? I mean, by the book, CBS, Champions, NBC.
What's the premise of Champions?
Champions, mid-season, NBC.
Ooh.
Anders Holm, who was in Top 5, the movie that I was in with Chris Hartman. The single-camera comedy follows Vince, a charismatic gym owner with no ambition who lives with his younger brother, Michael, Andy Favreau, a gorgeous idiot.
Let me move to the edge of my seat.
You know the simple life of women and working out is put on hold with a teenage son of Vince, blah, 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 blah.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking of a British TV show. I thought it was a revamp.
What's the CBS one that I've seen promoed where about a young, like a kid doctor? It's like a little older, like a college Doogie Howser. They've been running the hell out of that. Get to that title and I'll remember that.
The Good Doctor.
The Good Doctor, I think.
ABC. Mondays at 10 o'clock. A young surgeon with savant syndrome,
there
I didn't
you
even
go.
Know that was a thing, is recruited into the pediatric surgical unit of a prestigious hospital.
So it's just Doogie Howser.
I want savant syndrome.
Yeah, it's like Rain Man does medicine.
I don't know.
10 minutes to OR. 10 minutes to OR.
Good Girls with Mae Whitman. Three good girls, suburban wives and mothers suddenly find themselves in desperate circumstances, decide to stop playing it safe and risk everything to take their power back.
See, all these pitches sound the same to me. They're just like interchangeable. They're almost like color forms or Mad Libs. And I think, you know, we say this every week, but this is why the streaming content is so much more interesting.
Of course.
A million times more interesting.
Of course.
So what are the networks? So why don't the networks get more edgy? And there's a new Law and Order. There's a new Law and Order thing coming. Law and Order,
ooh.
True Crime, the Menendez brothers.
Yeah, that's, I watched that deal go down with Edie Falco and Dick Wolf, who came to an event I did. And he cornered her, and I knew they were talking about a show, and then he kept saying no.
SWAT is coming back. SWAT was a TV show, right?
Yeah,
but this one's about a guy who kills bugs.
Stop. It is.
It's Madcap.
No. SEAL Team.
Stop. You kidding?
Yes,
that's
I'm
CBS,
kidding.
That's actually.
Be great,
it is CBS.
The Bug Killers.
10 Days in the Valley.
SWAT.
ABC. Kira Sedgwick.
Who are you going to call?
Will and Grace is coming back.
Hey,
yeah.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And but that's not on a network, right? Isn't that like on Netflix or something?
No, it's going to be back on NBC, back. And they just renewed it for a second season without even airing a first episode.
It's a season? I thought it was just a couple of
12
specials.
12 episodes.
All right.
That's
we'll
a season
12
now.
New episodes, and they've just
eight,
ordered
eight
another
episodes
12.
A season now.
And Wisdom of the Crowd, another CBS show with Jeremy Piven. All right. So.
Wait, how will Jack play this many years later as a gay character on television? As a particularly broad
company?
Gay... No. Jack from the... You said they're bringing back that... The, what?
Will and
Susan
Grace.
Yeah,
Will
thank
Grace.
You. Will and Grace.
Sean Hayes' character and the Eric McCormick character.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's the original cast. They think they're probably going to...
No, he's going to be the same, but it's like, this is a different time than when Will and Grace first came out. And you had to pander a little to that, and you had to be broad if you were going to be gay on television. And now, not so important. And I don't know if he's going to come jumping into the scenes and, you know, you know what I mean? I just think he was of that time and not of this
company?
One.
Can you remake Three's Company, or is that premise completely implausible?
Well, that's Fox News. It's three good-looking women and a guy.
All right. So before
telling
we move away
what's
from
going on next
some
door.
TV questions. One, aside from, forget this new stuff. Is there any television?
Roger Ailes is.
Is there any television show?
I told you I was in his will. I got Gretchen Carlson. All right,
is there any?
She's living
prime time, Big Four network television show. Doesn't matter how many years it's been on or if it's on, that you actually watch.
What's your appointment television?
I'm not talking about the talk shows, Seth Meyers.
No, I know what you mean. Colbert, like a drama.
8 to 11 o'clock, Monday through Saturday, or 7 to 11 right. o'clock on Sundays.
I watch Archer.
That's not a big four. I'm saying NBC, CBS, ABC, or ABC. I'm sorry, CBS, NBC, Fox, or ABC. Is there any show on network in prime time that you actually watch?
I'm the complete wrong. Yeah, I have to.
Well,
pass.
Your answer be no.
So no, because I don't watch TV at all.
Is there anything you watch on network?
60 Minutes.
Oh, you go on the highbrow route.
No, I'm not highbrow. That's just what I still
watch. How about Law and Order SVU?
I used to watch.
No, I don't like
channel.
The SVU one. How about I like Modern the regular Family? Law and Order. No.
No. How about you, Bill Bergoglio?
Maybe The Simpsons.
Still watch The Simpsons.
Still watch
The Simpsons.
Sunday night, the first time. I mean, not just in syndication where it's on every half hour.
Anytime you wake up, there it is.
Yeah.
Sometimes I watch The Simpsons, but I have such a schedule now that I'd have to go through the trouble of DVRing it. And sometimes I remember and sometimes I don't.
Neil, people forget primetime. People who used to watch late night don't watch it anymore. They wait for the next morning and they see what if Conan
or they'll watch it on YouTube. All the bits.
We live in an age now where we don't have to live our lives around the program. We can program what we want into our lives.
So what's going to happen to network television, do you think? By the way, I'm watching TV shows the other day, and because people zip through commercials with their DVRs, in the middle of watching a show, I'm getting a Raymore and Flanagan ad that's taking up probably about 30% on the screen on the bottom of the show. It just cuts off the show. And it's not a moving head. It's just a still shot that says Raymore and Flanagan and shows you a bunch of furniture in a room. And it just stays up there for about 25 seconds or so, you know?
Someone has a great joke about they can't watch, like, Schindler's List and then have Conan dancing in the lower right-hand corner. Like, tonight on Conan, and he's dancing. People are marching
right,
into the ovens.
People aren't watching the commercials. I mean, I think that Madison Avenue, the ad agency, is something that you, Bill McCuddy, know a bit about. And the television networks are still operating on an old system that really does not have as much relevance, but they're not willing to let it go. I mean, market share and Nielsen ratings have gone down considerably, but I think that they are still operating to a large extent. Yes, they are doing podcasts and they are doing digital stuff and streaming, but in terms of
they're also doing as much product placement in shows like Idol and America's Got Talent as they can. They're all drinking from certain
that's
cups
correct
and
on America's Got Talent
and
when Howard was there they were drinking from Snapple, and now they have Dunkin' Donuts cups that are on America's Got Talent. So that's true. So what's going to happen to network television? Is it going to just die out eventually or become as...
Well, Susan is a content expert, and she's sort of the guru here, the seer. Oh. So let's put her on the spot and ask her what's going to happen.
Well, I was going to say, I don't even have TV. I only have Apple TV. So I don't watch any network TV at all.
That's the future. She's the youngster in the room.
But is it network TV on
Netflix.
Apple TV?
I only will put on like CBS Live to watch like hurricane coverage or something. But yeah, no, I don't get the shows.
Man, a chill just ran up.
Tell you what I think
most of my friends don't.
What's going to happen, Mike?
Well, I think what happened at Nor TV is what has already happened. I think that the content, let's say absorption, like how we view content, is changing constantly. So, I mean, I think the indication of what CBS, ABC did, where they're going to have to set up their own streaming channels, I think networks are going to eventually do that too. You're going to have to subscribe to
CBS
network.
CBS started it with the new Star Trek.
With the new Star Trek. I think that's the future.
And I can tell you from the news division. Because
so you can't watch it on regular CBS. You can't just turn on television.
You get to watch the pilot episode on CBS and later on this month. And then every other episode, you'll have to go.
Right.
I think it's like $5.99 a month.
Something like that.
Exclusively.
Exactly.
Wait, let's be really clear about this.
Right.
To get it at all, you have to pay the $5.99 a month,
right.
Or you can see it first for $5.99 a month, and then it runs on.
First episode.
Wow, that's unprecedented. They're going to show one episode of something.
That's to hook you in.
Yeah. Well, you see, but you got to remember, okay, and I'll use this as an example.
Thank you, Marshall McLuhan.
I think it's evolving.
I just happened to have Marshall McLuhan. That's a Woody Allen Annie Hall.
I think that the business model of the old TV network, obviously that's over. So they're slow to evolve, but I think it's going to become like this, everything's streaming. But I also think that's going to change. I mean, this is the, how you launched what they're doing in Star Trek now is how they're launching this new network. If you remember, the irony of Fox is that it was launched with Star Trek and black programming. That's how Fox was launched.
Moving color. And
look, Fox was launched. The initial shows on Fox were, and these were not.
Exactly.
I mean, Simpsons, Married with Children.
Exactly.
Those. Exactly. Those were.
And yeah. A lot of black and, programs. And, yeah, Star Trek. Star Trek was their big thing.
No, Star Trek was a CW show.
Was it?
Yep, it was.
That's right. You're right. It was CW. All right, same thing. They launched that network with Star Trek. So, point I'm making is that
BBC America,
this is how they launch it, and then it'll eventually evolve into what they want. So, I think they're just going to, like Howard Stern on Sirius, people jump to Sirius because of Howard Stern.
The CBS News Division, which I work for, is going big into streaming. I mean, just even the radio broadcasts now are now streamed totally 24 hours.
And, That's it. Yeah.
Again, to be specific, meaning it's on your computer and it's on right. 880 yeah, and it's on the dial yep. at the same yep. time.
Oh yeah,
right.
Because radio and TV, this
a lot of people are
CBSN
doing
now,
are listening to something while they're on their computer. They're
absolutely,
surfing.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely.
Buying shit on Amazon.
Spotify.
And they're listening to radio.
Yes, it's a whole multitasking.
Hopefully, Spotify.
That's
hopefully,
true.
Shortly Spotify. They'll be listening to Spotify live from where?
Michael's with the
Eagle Eye.
But I can't talk too much about that.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody been to the theater? No.
Yeah. What did I see? We talked about Michael Moore, who I've made a couple of contributions to and sent him stuff. And he's up through October. And I think if you're a fan of his, you'll like that. He's got another television show coming back. He had a Fox one like 20 years ago. And they brought him back. And he's, you know, so that's worth seeing, I think. A lot of stuff's going away that didn't get Tony nominated because...
I told you I saw the play that goes wrong, which is fun. It's all slapstick. I had to bring my 17-year-old nephew to that, and he loved it. I mean, and that's brought over from England. And in the news today is the fact that they're going to switch...
directors on Star Wars, right?
No, they're going to switch dollies in Hello
switching
Dolly.
Dollies, yeah. We're going to have Bernadette Peters.
Walk to the gay side.
Okay.
Stop. Switching dollies.
When is that going to happen?
That happens in January 20th. And luckily, my siblings and I have tickets to see it in December.
So before, while Bette's still there.
Yeah, Bette.
Because Bette went on vacation this summer.
$900 for four tickets.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Close, over $200 a piece. Well, I'm a mezzanine.
Dolly better come and say hello to you personally.
That's right. She knows me something.
All right. Well, I'll mention the only theater I've seen, and it's something that starts actually this Friday. It's a play called I Am Antigone. It's a retelling of Antigone from, it's a contemporary adaptation of the Sophocles piece.
Oh, pinch me.
Yeah. Well, I'm just
I can't wait.
But what's interesting is Miriam Sear is a director, and you may know her. She's a poet laureate and everything, but she was in Gothic. Do you remember that movie, Gothic?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And a few other movies that if you look her up, you'd see.
I'm seeing a play about a guy who thinks he's a Caribbean island called I Am Antigua. So that opens this Friday.
All right. I'm here all week.
All right.
That was exciting and fun and another
week,
great... What's happening next week?
Oh, my goodness. You don't want to miss next week. So next week, we've got a bunch of movies opening. We've got,
really? Tell us.
Well, we've got American Assassin.
Yes.
And that...
heard that's amazing.
Do you hear that's amazing?
I heard it was like amazing.
Who's in it?
Who's in it? Well, we've got Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
Speaking about Spider-Man Homecoming, Michael Keaton. And that...
Well, you're plugging the one movie you saw all summer, Spider-Man Homecoming.
And Taylor Kitsch, who was Tim Riggins in Friday Night Lights and also had that... huge bomb
I didn't think it was that bad. John Carter of Mars wasn't that bad.
Right, well, it kind of killed his career for a little while.
It did.
It assassinated it.
We've got a movie called Mother coming out next week.
What do you mean you got a movie called Mother? Aren't you dying to see that?
Well, I am.
We've talked about the last 3 weeks about
Darren
that.
Aronofsky and his girlfriend in real life, Jennifer Lawrence. And Javier Bardem is in it, and Domhnall Gleeson is in it, Michelle Pfeiffer, Ed Harris, Brian
Gleeson. Does anybody know about any of that screening anywhere this week?
No,
but it's Paramount. They'll tell us when they're
ready. Yeah,
they'll
tell us when they're ready. Yeah, Paramount, forget about it.
Well, that's something that
we'll
I am genuinely looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, that's true.
And also next week we've got Brad Status.
Oh, that looks great. That looks like Greenberg, and I'm excited for that. I haven't seen that yet.
It's a Ben Stiller movie.
You liked Greenberg?
Yeah, I loved Greenberg.
From Amazon Studios.
So it's a father and son.
Michael Sheen.
Do you know the premise? The father and son go looking at colleges, and all of Ben Stiller's adult friends are super rich and successful, and he works for like a green sort of like give back company of some kind. He's like not on the same level of as his friends, and he's like having a midlife crisis that's getting played out by his son's perhaps getting into Harvard. It looks really. Is that a Noah Baumbach? Is that
sounds like a Noah Baumbach?
No, it's
Greta Gerwig's movie.
Directed by
Toronto,
Mike White.
Michael White.
Mike White.
You remember Mike White?
And that's about it for next week. There's a movie called Vengeance, a Love Story, but I don't know much about that one. Bill McCuddy, what's coming out on?
It's kind of a quiet week on demand. I think we've talked about everything that's opened up. So yeah, nothing's popping this week.
And The Big Sick, as we talked about earlier, that is actually coming out on DVD.
By the way, you know what I went to the theater to see, and I paid to go see it.
What'd you say?
Because you talk about that shared experience. Uh-huh. Terminator 2 in 3D.
Oh. Yeah, I heard that was kind of a ripoff.
Well, yeah, because...
Did James Cameron supervise that?
He did supervise it, because after I saw the thing, I was like,
at the bank, he supervised it.
He says, he kept talking... Again, if I had seen it before, I wouldn't have quite read it the same way. But after, when I'm watching him talk about doing the restoration, some interview, he's like, yeah, and I thought, well, it should be subtle. And then there are areas where I thought, well, we don't need any 3D. So I didn't do it.
So parts of it are in 3D.
Well, again, they're not promoting it that way, but definitely their parts. I mean, it was great to see it on the big screen, I'll say. But I was surprised because I bought tickets, you know, me and a few of the boys, a couple of the hardcore, you know, we went. And there was like 10
nobody
people
there
in the theater.
Yeah. Did it get darker? Was it because
yeah, you wear
of
those
3D?
Glasses? It's like
was the 3D process make it darker?
It's a little polarized
because that's a movie that pops. I mean, it's bright. It does. The silvers jump
still
off.
It's still a really well made film. Still a lot of
no. It's a great film. I've seen it so many times. I'm not sure I need to see partial 3D.
See,
well,
I don't watch TV.
I don't like partial anything. I mean, I remember seeing
kind of
Christopher Nolan's Batman in IMAX, and there were only certain sections when the screen would fill out and fill up the whole IMAX screen, and then there were certain sections.
You got confused then, didn't you?
Where it was, you know, like a letterboxy kind of experience. Right. So, I don't know. I James Cameron filmed Avatar in 3D. We've talked about this in the past. I like certain 3D movies when they're filmed in 3D and people know what they're doing. The director knows what they're doing. I would be interested in seeing this because it's James Cameron, although it was not originally shot in 3D. I mean, what's the most memorable?
Probably the helicopter sequence. Remember when he grabs a helicopter and he comes in and he does that whole thing? You know, there are some sequences that are very dynamic, and the chase down the highway.
The office building where the helicopter's outside.
The helicopter's outside, and they're going down the highway.
Sarah Connor.
That's very
3D. Sarah Connor, I am here to...
Sarah Connor. It's great. It's a great...
Wow, if
great
I closed my eyes, you really were Schwarzenegger there for a second.
There you go. Anyway,
I mentioned at the top of the show, so I just want to say quickly, I'm underwhelmed. I really, really, really like Bateman. Jason Bateman.
You're
in Ozark.
With his show?
I'm only up to episode 10, and there's so many extraneous subplots in involving an FBI guy who's gay and some other stuff in Ozark that I am, as much as I love Bateman, I also have no idea how he's laundering $10 million in this podunk little town, so that bugs me. But he's great, but I don't believe the hype is what I said.
I think I was on the show where with the one he did with the words. The
Bad Words. I love that. I love that movie.
I love that too, yeah.
That's streaming right now.
Bad Words was great.
And then there's another one that
Susan,
he did.
Did you see Bad Words?
Meet the something.
I did. There's a great
the
one with Christopher Walken.
Right.
Where him and his wife were like
liars
kind of
the...
like con artists.
Oh, yeah,
for
yeah.
That kind, they were like, they did these elaborate practical jokes, stunts.
Oh, yeah, that's the Somebodies. It's like the name of the family.
Right, right.
And
Meet the Somebodies.
Bateman, and I forgot who his sister was.
He directed that one,
I think.
Yes,
he did.
It's a really good movie.
That wasn't his first one.
The first one was Bad Words, I guess. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Second one was, I like that too.
By the way, those of you who can't see it at home, Susan has her microphone away from her, and like Molly Shannon, she just reaches in and goes, it's my turn to talk now. And then she sits back. So we've enjoyed having a special guest today.
Do you know the name of that Jason Bateman film?
I do not.
You do not. Well, I'm going to tell you the name of the film.
The film is
called The Family Fang. The Family Fang.
Yes. Family Fang.
And it's very good. But you loved Bad Words. Bad Words was on your top 10 list.
It was on my top 10 list, number 10 or 9.
I was on that show.
Catherine Hahn
was great, too.
Catherine Hahn. All right. Funny. Well, we all want to see the Darren Aronofsky movie. We look forward to it.
I don't know. I have doubts about that.
What? Really? Have you seen the... did you like Rosemary's Baby?
I love Rosemary's Baby, and this just looks...
All right, you'll like this. Shut up. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. Say whatever you want, but I'm...
No, I was just going to say, it just looks overwrought, and I love...
Oh, overwrought.
Javier,
you like him?
I do. I like them all, but every time I see it, I just find myself cringing, and I love
Michelle Pfeiffer looks so creepy cool in this, and then she's got a sex scene with Ed Harris that's like, she's still amazing looking to me.
The Miracle Mop movie with Jennifer Lawrence.
Joy.
Who directed that? Was that
David O. Russell?
David O. Russell. Yeah. Did you like that?
I did actually like
Thank
that.
You.
I didn't think I was going to, and then I did. So maybe I will like this. I hope I do.
I like Joy.
But every time I see the trailer,
Did you like Joy? Gilbert Gould?
Not so much.
How we digger.
Not so much. All right. Well, anyway.
Did you see that this summer, too? Is that why you brought it up?
No, I saw that. That movie is older than you think. It's
I didn't see that in the theaters. I waited, so I didn't love it enough to go out.
All right. Well, anyway, thank you for sitting around talking movies with us, the Talking Pictures podcast. Bill McGotty, what do we do here every week?
We watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
I think we watch the bad stuff.
We watch everything bad. If it's bad, we see it.
Right. So for Bill McGotty.
We could change the show called Watching Bad.
Bill Bregoli.
Yes, I'm going.
Mike Sargent.
Yes.
And his friend that he brought along to the podcast, Susan, this week. Thank you for sitting in with us and sharing your opinions. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies with you again next week.